You are listening to the weekly message from Mount Helena Community Church. Celebration services are every Sunday at 10 a.m. at the Gateway Center. Or join us live online at www.mounthelena.cc.
My name is Jeff Wald, and this is my family. There are seven of us currently. We seem to be adding more and more. I have a 16-year-old. Tierney was seven yesterday. Tally was four on Thursday. And then there's Dallas. He's 20 months, and Kira is about 8 weeks. So I am the, my wife and I lead the marriage ministry here at Mount Helena, and I do want to make a little plug. If you look in your program, there is a marriage conference coming on October 17th in Townsend. My wife and I are going to that along with several other couples. The Hayeses and a few other couples are going to this. I would really like to encourage you to sign up for this. It's going to be a good time. It's going to encourage your marriage. There you go. So I am pretty good at telling stories. I can retell things pretty well. And this message is a compilation of things that I've heard over the last year from godly men like Tim Keller and Howard Dayton and Brian Cluth. So I make no apologies. I'm sure they'd be thrilled that I was sharing some of the things that I've learned from them over here. And if you have your Bible, what I would like you to do is turn to Acts 20. Acts 20, and you're going to put your finger there or leave it open to come back on your iPhone or whatever, and we're going to come back there. First, I'm going to tell you a story, and this story is about a man by the name of Gil Mertz. Gil was about 40, when he was about 45 when this story happened. This happened several years ago. He got a call from his sister that his dad was on his deathbed, and she asked if he was going to the funeral. He said, why bother? We haven't talked in 10 years. Because Gil's father was abusive growing up. He was a violent man. He was a hard man. And he had made really poor choices raising his 11 children. Gil was one of 11. His father was constantly disappointed, constantly violent, constantly angry. And he never went to any of Gil's football games, any of his sporting events, any of his theater events. He didn't go to his graduation. He didn't go to his wedding. He didn't show up to the births of his children. But God convicted him to see his dad before he died, so he decided to make the 2,000-mile trip to go see him. And as he walked in to see the only man that he had ever feared, the man that was larger than life, he found that his father was a frail old man in a wheelchair. And after sitting there for a while in the lobby, giving the customary small talk, he asked his dad if he could go to their room. And he wheeled his dad into his room, and he turned around and he shut the door and he locked it. And he went over and he kneeled down in front of his father. And he said, "Dad, what do you think of me?" And his dad said, "Well, you know, I think a lot of all of my children. There's Sue and there's Virginia. Dad, I didn't ask you what you thought of all of that, all of us. I asked what you thought of me." "Well, I know that you've become a pastor and you're a very hard worker." He sat back in his wheelchair and he had passed the test. But Gil was not satisfied. He said, "Dad, I didn't ask you about what you thought about what I did. I asked you what you thought of me." And his father sat back in his chair again, and he didn't have an answer. And Gil said, "Dad, last week I turned 45, and never once, ever have I heard you say that you love me." "Well, my father never told me he loved me either," his dad said. He said, "Dad, I need you to know that I have really struggled in my life because I've never heard you tell me that you love me. And I just concluded that I must be unlovable." He began to cry. "I had a lot of people tell me a lot of things in my life and very nice things about me, but there's no one's approval that I ever wanted than yours." And Gil's dad took his took Gil's face in his hands and he held him and he looked at him and he said, I now realize that I have failed you as a father. And Gil was able to say something that he had waited 45 years to say. Dad, I forgive you. His dad wasn't angry and he wasn't defensive. He was genuinely set free by the pronouncement. And then he said something to Gil that he had waited 45 years for him to say. Son, I love you. And at that, both men leaped up, the old man out of his wheelchair, and they embraced each other for the first time in Gil's life. And as they talked a little bit longer, Gil got up to leave, and he stuck his hand out to his father, and he said, goodbye, Dad. And his dad grabbed his hand and reached him down and got to his nose, and he said, never forget that I love you. Those were the last words that he ever heard his dad say before he died. And he said, Dad, I promise I will never forget. The power of words. The power of words. The Bible speaks over and over and over. What comes from our mouth carries life and death. They influence and touch and curse and inspire and hurt and teach and cut down and weigh down and bless. But final words, there's something about final words that carry a specific weight to our lives. Something even more powerful. And there's examples all around us. You know, you hear people on their deathbed talk about in their final words. I just wanted to let you know that I did it. I was the one that committed the crime. I just wanted to let you know I was the one that slept with your sister. Okay? Confessions and pronouncements of love. And we see that in the Bible all the time. Things like, this thing is yours. I'm dying. This is now yours. In Solomon's case, his father David, on his deathbed, saying, follow the Lord, son. Remember the inheritance that you've gotten and pass it down. Remember to stay faithful and true. Or Jesus, dying on the cross, says to his mother and the disciple that he loves, John, behold, woman, this is your son, and behold, this is your mother. And he took her home that day and cared for her the rest of her life. The power of our last words. That brings us back to Acts 20, and that's where we're going to start today. Here's the context, okay? Paul has founded the early church in the city of Ephesus. There it is in modern-day Turkey. Okay? He has spent a number of years there teaching and training this church that he founded from the ground up. Okay? He has absolutely poured his life into them. He has discipled them, loved them, lived with them, taught them. And now he's headed to Jerusalem. Okay? And he knows that he is going to his certain imprisonment and most likely death. And so what he does is he gathers the elders, the leaders of the church. By the way, this is not a photograph. It is a depiction. Okay? He gathers them, brings them around him, and says something, the final words that he's ever going to say to them. The people that he's loved, his dearest friends. He gives them the main thing that he wants them to remember. And so we're going to go to Acts 20:26. Well, I'm going to start in verse 18. He's talking a little bit about, you know me, this is where I've been, this is where I came from, I've been here walking with you, being with you. And then he gets to verse 26, and he says, therefore I testify to you this day that I am innocent of the blood of all, for I did not shrink from declaring to you the whole counsel of God. Pay careful attention to yourselves and to all the flock, which the Holy Spirit has made you overseers to take care of the church of God, which he obtained with his own blood. And then he goes on and he says here, be alert, there's going to be fierce wolves coming among you. They're going to try to tear you away from the gospel. The things that I've taught you, don't fall asleep, be alert. But this is where he gets to his final words, right here. And now, I commend you to God and to the word of his grace, which is able to build you up and to give you the inheritance among all those who are sanctified. I coveted no one's silver or gold or apparel. You yourselves know that these hands ministered to me, to my necessities, and to those who were with me. In all things, I have shown you that by working hard in this way, we must help the weak and remember the words of the Lord Jesus, how he himself said, it is more blessed to give than to receive. And when he had said these things, he knelt down and he prayed with them all. And there was much weeping on the part of all, and they embraced him and they kissed him, being sorrowful most of all because the word he had spoken, that they would never see his face again. And then they accompanied him to the ship. Now, isn't that interesting? The final words that he gives, he says two things to them. The two main things that I want you to remember. Here's the first thing. Now I commend you or commit you to God and the word of his grace, which is able to build you up and to give you the inheritance among all those sanctified. I want you to remember the word of grace. Okay? I want you to remember the gospel, the things that I've taught you. I want you to remember that you're sinners saved by grace. I want you to enjoy the inheritance from the Father for those of you who believe and to prepare yourself for life everlasting. I want you to remember the whole counsel of God, what I taught you, the gospel. You're sinners saved by grace. That is not a surprise. Okay? That's something that I would say if I was never going to see you again. Okay? It's something I would maybe share with my kids, right? But here's the second thing that he says. And this surprises me. He says, I coveted no one's silver or gold or apparel. And then later he says, in all things I have shown you that by working hard in this way we must help the weak and remember the words of the Lord Jesus, as he himself said, it is more blessed to give than received. Huh? Remember the gospel of grace and be radically generous. What? Two things. Remember the gospel, lead radically generous lives. His final words to the people that he loved, that he's never going to see again. Now, are those two separate things? Okay, remember the gospel, and then on a completely different note, be generous. I don't think so. This one leads to this. This is a response of living out the word of grace. Okay? So he says, never forget, believe and carry out the gospel, and lead radically generous lives. Wow. Okay? What he's more saying than this is simply nothing less than this. If you're really going to live out the gospel that you claim to believe, you're going to live lives of radical generosity. That is tough. That is tough because, frankly, many of us are not that generous. It is a learned trait. It is something that you're not born with and you're not born again with. Okay? Lead radically generous lives. So, these are the very same words that I believe that Paul would have for the church today, here at Mount Helena Community Church 2015. If he was coming to us today, and he had poured his life out into us, and he was leaving, live your life for the gospel, lead radically generous lives. Now, I am up here to encourage you just as much as I am here to encourage myself, okay? To convict you, to convince you, to edify you, to stir you up with new or renewed commitment to generosity in this conversation. It's a tough topic to talk about because people typically get edgy when someone at the front of a church is talking about generosity, because typically what they hear is fundraising, But I am not here to talk about fundraising today. As a matter of fact, I don't really even have a stake in whether or not you give to Mount Helena or any other organization for that matter. I could. I'm not a part of the leadership here. I should say I'm one of you because we're all together. We're all together in this. We are Mount Helena Community Church. But I want to talk to you about generosity and what in particular that this passage is saying about generosity. So let's break this out into 3 points. I want to look at Acts 20 in these verses, what he's saying. The first thing, the healing power of generosity, okay? Let's talk about the healing power of generosity and what he's saying. Okay, so he says a statement. He quotes Jesus, and this quote, how he himself said, "It is more blessed to give than to receive," that is not used anywhere else in the Gospels. He's actually quoting Jesus because it's a well-known quote among the disciples, among the people, that this is what Jesus says. It's just not recorded in the Gospels. How many of you know that the Bible was not written in English? Okay? It's not, it wasn't. Okay, the Bible is written in 3 languages. Does anyone want to know what they are? Call them out. Greek, Hebrew, and Aramaic. Okay, good. What was Acts written in? Greek, yes, okay. So what we're going to do is I want to zoom in on a statement here, and actually, we're actually going to look at one particular word, and we're going to look at Jesus' quote, "It is more blessed to give than to receive," and it's this word, blessed, or blessed. What does that word mean? Today, I am blessed because in English, I'm fortunate. Hashtag blessed. You know it. You know it. Hashtag blessed. All right? So blessed that I was able to get the dessert I wanted at the restaurant. So blessed that God added another child to our family. So blessed that I got that job promotion that I wanted. Okay? And what really that means when we say we're blessed is we're super fortunate. God poured something out on me and I got it. Yeah. Okay, but that's not what blessed means in this context, and it's not what the word means in the Bible, okay? This word is makarios, okay? Makarios, I did the little thing that shows you how to pronounce it, okay? I'm trying to remember here, okay? Makarios, all right? And in the Greek world, makarios typically means similar to kind of what we kind of came to mean. It means you're above everything else. You got stuff. Okay, you're above it all right? You receive wealth, and you're above the worries of ordinary people, okay? So in that context, in the Greek world, in Paul's time, you're talking about the gods, and you're talking about the wealthy, the super rich, the super powerful wealthy, and you're also talking about the dead, because they're above all the cares and the worries of this world, okay? Makarios. But in this context, makarios does not mean that, okay? So in this case, he turns it on its head, and makarios means to experience the wholeness or fullness of God and to become a partaker of God, okay? That's what blessed means, all right? So it is bringing in our spirit to his spirit coming close to us and experience fullness and healing and wholeness, his spirit to our spirit. Blessed really means that if we're being brought near to God and we're being healed and made whole, okay? So I think you guys remember the word blessed, or I said blessed, which is a blessed are the, what is that from? The Beatitudes, right? Okay, so let's look at the Beatitudes. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, makarios. Blessed are the poor. Blessed are the meek, makarios, all right? Peacemakers, pure in heart, merciful. Let's go down there. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And blessed are those, are you, when others revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you. Super fortunate to have people reviling me. Hashtag blessed. Okay? Not what it means, all right? It means bringing the glory of God upon you, our spirit being drawn near to him. Let's go to 1 Peter 4:14. If you are insulted for the name of Christ, you are blessed. Yes, because the Spirit of glory and God rests upon you. What is the result, or why are you blessed? Because the Spirit of glory and of God rests upon you. You are blessed. Okay? I was just reading in Revelation last night how another blessed in Revelation 1. Blessed are those who read the word and hear the word and live out the word and act upon the word. Those are blessed. Those are people that are blessed, being brought near. So let's go back to it is more blessed to give than to receive. So what does that mean? Okay? It's through radical giving that we bring healing, wholeness, fullness, the closeness of God's Spirit to the world. Okay? So what we're doing is when we're blessed, we're coming near to God, we're bringing wholeness, we're bringing fullness. And when we're giving, we are not only experiencing that for ourselves, that wholeness, that fullness, that healing, but we are bringing it to the world. We're bringing it to people around us. That is the healing power of generosity. Isn't that cool? That is really cool. All right. So let's take a look at, wow, I'm really going through this fast. Okay. Let's take a look at the next thing, this part two, the hidden power of greed, okay? The hidden power of greed. Paul says, I coveted no one's silver or gold or apparel. You yourselves know that these hands ministered to my necessities and to those who are with me. He says, I coveted no one's silver, gold, or apparel. I think it's astounding that in his farewell speech to his beloved friends, he says, watch out for greed. Watch out for greed. I didn't do this, nor should you. Because in response to not doing this, give. Okay? Watch out for greed. Now, he must be saying what I would think is there's nothing more important and there's nothing that's a bigger problem than greed. Okay? But here's the deal. Nobody thinks that greed's a problem for them. Nobody. I don't think that greed's a problem for me. If I'm going to list my top things, issues that I'm dealing with in my life, greed is not at the top of the list, and I'm sure it's not for you either. Maybe it's I have a little problem with lying or anger or lust or any number of things, but greed is typically not at the top of the list. So, Paul says, watch out for greed. He's referencing, and he talks about kind of like this, when Jesus says this, watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Stop. How many times does Jesus say, watch out for murder, watch out for adultery, watch out for anything else? He doesn't. He warns against them, but he doesn't use these specific pointed words. Watch out, be on your guard against all kinds of greed. A man's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions. And so then he told them a story, a parable. And he said, the land of a rich man produced plentifully. And he thought to himself, what should I do? For I have nowhere to store my crops. And he said, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to tear down my barns, and I'm going to build larger ones, and there I'm going to store all my grain and my goods. And then I will say to my soul, soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said to him, fool, this night your soul is required of you, and the things you have prepared, whose will they be? And so is the one who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God. Warning, watch out, greed, aka covetousness or selfishness, steals from God and keeps for itself. God owns it all, and we are just his stewards. And then Paul echoes Jesus again in Colossians 3, and he says this, watch out for greed. He says, put to death, therefore, what is earthly in you, sexual immorality, impurity, passion, evil desire, and greed, which is idolatry. Greed is idolatry. So how is greed idolatry? Let's look. Jesus says, do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven where neither moth nor rust destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Jesus is not saying that particularly money itself is the idol, but rather what it does, it exposes where your idols are. Your money points, where you're spending money points to what your idols really are, what you really value, okay? So that's what Jesus is saying here. Covetous or greed misplaces our allegiance from heaven to stuff. It's a desire for money, for things, for comfort, for safety, placing our treasures in something other than God. And what Jesus really means is that for your money's a perfect place to find out where your idols are. So, I like giving money away. I do. I like giving money away. It wasn't always like that. I used to not like giving money away at all. But still, it's somewhat of an effort for me. When I pull out my checkbook, and I do, I still use my checkbook. Because here's where I am right now. I do not like giving money. I do not like giving that 2.9% to the credit card company when I give. I still pull out my checkbook, and I write a check. It's still somewhat of an effort for me, okay? But there are some things in my life that are less than an effort for me to spend on, and I'll just be real today. My wife knows this. Fountain drinks at the gas station. It's really, really easy. I don't even think about it. I just pull out a dollar and plunk it down for something that's really unhealthy and really bad for me, okay? It's really, really easy for me to do that. Another thing that's really easy for me to do is spending money on my kids, especially my 16-year-old. Now, he would beg to differ because I restrain myself. But if he's coming to me and he asks me for things, there are many times that I'm going to say yes, especially when he's playing baseball at a tournament. And he comes to me and says, Dad, can I have a Gatorade? And I'm like, let me get my wallet out here. Okay? Dad, can I get a T-shirt? Hold on, let me see. You know, Dad, can I get this? Here, just take it. Just take my wallet. Just take it, okay? It's really hard, and that is not permission for you to dig through there, okay? Okay? It is really easy for me to do that, okay? I have to restrain myself, and my parents are here today, and I get that from them because they do that with their kids as well, my sister and I, okay? I don't know what their heart attitude behind it is, but I see that modeled for me being generous to my children, and I have really inherited that, okay? So, but I really need to restrain myself so that it's not completely effortless. And I don't know where it is. I don't know what is it effortless for you. You know, what do you spend money on effortlessly? What is it? Like, you know, Wendy's? I don't know, fast food? Going out to eat, all right? What about your phone? Is it effortless for you to spend $150 a month on unlimited data or getting the newest iPhone? Maybe it's books for some of you. Some of you really value the academic and how it makes you feel and what other people think of you, all right? Maybe it's beauty products. Maybe you have no problem spending money on that. Maybe it's just shopping. Just shopping in general. It makes me feel good. I'm going to head out and do that. Ooh, that one hurts. For some of you. Hunting? Yeah, that one hurts. Effortlessly. I have effort, no problem spending money on anything I want. Hunting. Maybe it's filling your car up with gas. This is one for me. I don't even think about it. I just do it, okay? I just drive around as much as I want and just fill it up. Don't even think about it, all right? Maybe it's power tools. That's another one for me. I always justify that I need a power tool because obviously it's saving us money by me doing it myself. Don't have to contract it out. I'm going to do it myself, okay? Maybe it's music or apps or anything along those lines. Maybe, you know, things like that. Maybe it's fishing flies. Maybe it's fishing. I don't know. Could be. Or it's spending money on your credit cards, just not thinking about it, okay? Doing it effortlessly. But really, when it comes down to it, what's effortless? Spending money on me. Now, if you want to spend money on me, I put my picture up here, you're feel free to spend money on me. But what I want you to do is imagine yourself in that mirror, okay? That's one of my better pictures, okay? With the tiny hat. Okay, tiny hat. Spending money on yourself. Really, greed is selfishness. It's, I'm getting my identity by being a good dad. I get my identity because my kids like me. All right? I get my identity by wearing camo, going around and shooting big animals. I get my identity. No, and that's fine. That's fine. I get my identity by being a construction worker or being an academic type person and writing on my blog and people telling me how great I am. Okay? Where are you getting your identity? That's the question. That's what really greed is. Where your treasures are, there is your heart also. Really, I get them from both. It's true. I get it from Jesus. I get it from giving, but I also get it from those things too. Not so much fishing flies, but a lot of the other things. All right, so how do we break that? How do we move away from that? How do we break the power of identifying ourselves with things and moving on and being generous? Here's how. We break the power of greed through, as Paul says, the healing power of generosity. That seems a little circular, but it's true. And what we're going to do is we're going to go back and take a look. Okay? He says, now I commend to you God and the word of his grace, which is able to build you up and to give you the inheritance among those who are sanctified. So remember what we said, one leads to the other. Okay? The gospel of grace leading to a life of generosity. All right? What he's really saying is, this is how you do it. Grace. Grace. And what is grace? Grace. Okay? Free and unmerited favor of God. Or, as I learned from my fifth grade Sunday school teacher, Gene Hansen, grace is an acronym. God's riches at Christ's expense. Okay? God's riches at Christ's expense. How do we overcome our greed? How do we be more generous? We overcome it through grace. And I want you to remember, at Christ's expense, Christ gave his life up. He had everything. He had everything. He sat at the right hand of the Father. He had power. He had authority. He had everything. He had the world. He had the universe. And he gave it up for the one thing that he didn't have. And what was that one thing he didn't have? You, me. He gave it up for us. He gave up his life so generously that he gave up his own life for us so that we could have life. That is the greatest act of generosity in the history of the world. And you see, when we respond out of the gospel of grace, the things that we've learned, as Paul's talking, the whole counsel of God, and we respond out of grace, out of that word of grace, that gospel of grace, we respond not out of an emotional response, because that's kind of how we want to sometimes do, or an academic response out of a mind, but we do it in response out of the greatest, from the greatest act of generosity this world has ever seen, the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ. That is our response, okay? Radical, lavish generosity through the word of grace, okay? So we're going to get in a little bit of nuts and bolts here. How do we do that? How are we doing? How's the church doing? How are the people of God doing when it comes to lavish generosity? Well, the numbers aren't really that great, okay? So this is giving to any organization, to anything out of people's income that are people who call themselves Christians. One-third of Christians give nothing. One-third of people give less than $500 a year. One-third of people give more than $500 a year. Okay, well, that's good. It's good to know, because, you know, someone could give like $3 million, and that kind of, you know, covers it. But how about the church itself? How about giving to the church? How about giving to this church? What does that look like? To the local church. 20% of the people do 80% of the giving. So I asked JR, I asked him on Thursday, I said, is that true for Mount Helena? Because, no, that can't be true. He said, yeah, it's true. 20% of us do 80% of the giving. And that includes every people who show up and they greet and they do children's church and, you know, show up regularly. That's typically, that's how we're doing. Okay? So why don't we give generously? There are a number of factors. One is, you know, indebtedness. One is just plain selfishness. Another is lack of understanding what God says in his Bible about it. And there's lots and lots of stuff. There's lots of things that I could have covered in here talking about giving of your first fruits, okay? The principle of reaping and sowing. Okay, God responding to our giving by him giving back to us. But what I see really in from this and from my own self, the biggest factor is fear. Okay, fear that when it comes to finances and giving, you've got tax season and mortgages and car payments and school loans and creditors and kid expenses, you name it. And I'm afraid that if I give, that I am not going to be able to cover my bills. That if I give, I'm not going to be able to do the things that I really am passionate about. Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. But maybe you also have a fear of those who have broken financial promises in the past. Those leaders, maybe even in the church, maybe in an organization. We see it all the time. People that have taken money and misused it and abused it and taken it for themselves. Televangelists bragging on the air about their jet. Or this person embezzled money out of this nonprofit. It's really hard to know who to trust. That's why at Mount Helena, we try to be as transparent as possible, okay? In your program, there is a list of all of the giving that takes place, and we're very transparent. Mount Helena Community Church is very transparent about the giving and what goes out and where the expenses go. We also have a yearly money meeting that JR leads, and you can come and ask any questions and see the books. Sheree is more than happy to answer any questions that you have. Okay? Open, honest transparency. If that's a fear of yours, I want to assure you that there's accountability here. Now, as you look at those numbers, so what is the, let's take a look. What is the, let's see, the general give, let's see, Our weekly expenses are $8,389 a month. And last week, we gave $4,011.95. Now, I'm not a math major. I wasn't a math major. But that doesn't seem right. Does that add up? I don't know. Okay, so what I want to do is I want to encourage you. We are the church, okay? This church, coming together, just being frankly and honest with you, we're the church. The church is generosity. What we give, what we do, how we support ourselves is directly tied to regular giving, what you give. Directly tied, okay? So if we are going to give to an organization, if we're going to give of ourselves out of the big pot, we all pool our money, we stick it in together on a weekly basis, and then we're able to be generous to the community. That's what happens at Mount Helena, okay? We all come together, we stick it in a pot, and then we're generous. We push it out the door to other people. And sometimes we have expenses. We have staff expenses, and there's expenses with the mortgage. I don't know, that mortgage, that's a big one. There's mission that's for giving. There's utility, janitorial, other things, operational costs, stuff like that, okay? So we're coming together to be generous. So I want to encourage you, if you call Mount Helena your home, if this is your church, I want to encourage you to be generous so we can all pool our money together and be generous to the community at large. If you're interested in giving to another organization or somewhere out there, there are organizations out there called the Evangelical Council for Financial Accountability. This is a seal, a stamp that is put on organizations that are committed to transparency, accountability, and if you give your money to them, they're open and honest and share their books, okay? So there's lots and lots of organizations out there. So we're not talking about just being generous toward the church, but being generous to a lot of other organizations, okay? I am not asking for your donation. I'm not trying to guilt you, but I want to encourage you. I want to encourage you, just as Paul talks about, there's life, there's healing, giving power, not only for ourselves, but for the world around us, through this church, through other organizations. Look at all these organizations at Mount Helena and the people in this church support. This is encouraging. Some of the ones I'll just point out, I'll just go through them. Life Houses, Frontline Missions, Options Women's Clinic, Habitat for Humanity, Big Brothers, Big Sisters, God's Love, The Little Children's Home, Helena Food Share, Intermountain, Operation Christmas Child, Special Olympics, Family Promise, Good Samaritan, Philippine Frontline Ministries, going to be here next week. Voice of the Martyrs, World Vision, the Friendship Center, CASA, Hunt SA, Hunt South Africa, Catholic Social Services, Compassion International, Westmont, the Angel Fund, Toys for Tots, Florence Crittenden, African Renewal Ministries. There's a big Evangelical Council for Financial Accountability right on their page, and Africa Renewal Ministries. Montana Foster Care System, and Red Cross, all right? So there are lots of opportunities for you to be generous. Which one should you give to? Yes. Yes, okay? If you don't know, just pick one. Pick one. My wife and I are passionate about certain things, and we have several of them that we support, all right? So it's difficult to see a big list like that. We can start small. We can start really small. So my son and Ryan and a couple other guys passed out a card at the beginning of the service. You want to pull that card out and take a look at it. It looks like this. I made this card. All right? We're going to start small as a church. If you don't know where to start being generous, this is where you're going to start. You're going to take this card, and you're going to use it to either give it to somebody, or you are going to use it to remind yourself to be generous to someone else. I tried to take a lot of the churchy language out of it, and because, you know, we don't want to guilt people into things or do anything like that. We want to point people to Jesus, don't we? So maybe you're going to give it to the custodian at work on your office floor with a $20 bill. And you're going to say, somebody gave this to me. Here you go. And leave it at that. Maybe you're going to be at the motor vehicles department and you've been waiting in line for an hour and there's a lady with her three kids that are really, really, they have a lot of energy. Okay? And her number is far away from yours and you're next. And you walk, this is really hard. I know it is. And you walk up to her and you say, can I trade numbers with you? What? And you go back into the back of the line. Boy, does that stink. But that is bringing the healing power of the gospel of grace into this world. Or maybe, I know that some of you love coffee. I've seen this. This happened to me. When I'm in line and I get out my little card to pay and someone said, the person that was just here took care of it for you. And they wanted you to have this card. Maybe you don't hand it out at all. Maybe you just keep it in your wallet to remind you to do this every once in a while, to be generous to someone, to bring the healing power of the gospel of grace to this world. That's what God called us to do. It's what Paul called his church to do, didn't he? He said his very last words, remember the gospel of grace and be radically, promiscuously generous people of God. How about that? It's pretty cool, huh?
For more information, visit our website at www.mounthelena.cc. Download our mobile app available in iTunes and Google Play. Be sure to check us out on Twitter and Facebook.